Hello and welcome to Moonwise, a monthly podcast featuring conversations with women of power. I'm your host, Dorte Sophie Royal, and in this episode, we bring you my conversation with Michelle Coleman about connecting with spirit and the ancestors. We talk about broadening our perspective through the Akashic Records and the path of decolonizing spirituality. We discuss humanity's power of free will and how we can open to our infinite possibilities as a collective. Michelle also shares her tips for nurturing a relationship with the ancestors and engaging with spirit in everyday life. I want to send a big thank you to all of our Patreon subscribers. Every contribution helps to make this show possible. You can join us at patreon.com/moonwise, where I'm sharing a guide to my favorite fall herbs to support us in fire and flu season. I'd also like to invite you all to join me and Susan Lipschitz for our virtual New Moon Circles over Zoom. These gatherings have proven to be such a highlight of my month, and I leave each one feeling nourished and reminded that I'm not alone. Each circle features astrology updates, writing prompts, herbal insights, and a guided meditation. The next one will be on October 16th, 2020, so visit moontent.co to reserve your spot. Okay, on with our show. Michelle Coleman is an ordained earth-based interfaith minister, spiritual advisor, Aberisha, and intuitive reader. She is a natural-born healer, leader, and nurturer, tasked with helping the world remember how to live in healing love. Hi, Michelle. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Hi, Dorote. Thank you for having me.
It feels really like a good moment to check in with you due to the work that you've been doing. And it's also just really nice to reconnect with you. It's been many years since we've been together in circle and ceremony, but I've just been following your work for many years. And yeah, I'm just thrilled to chat with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Likewise. I've also been following your work, and it's so uplifting and such a beauty medicine. So I feel so good to be in this space with you today.
Thank you, Michelle. Well, one of the reasons that I wanted to chat is that, of course, we are going through quite a challenging time here on Earth. And what I love about the messages that you are often sharing, they seem to come from quite a broader perspective than what many of us humans might be able to access on the daily. And one thing that I love about how you describe your work is that, you know, it's for people who perhaps aren't really resonating with traditional religion, but also aren't really into the New Age fluff. And so you're inhabiting a different space that I think is really appealing, where it's connecting to some really potent divine energy, but also in a very practical, straightforward way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. I feel like it's been kind of like a lifelong journey to get to this place where I feel really grounded in my spiritual practice and my approach to spirit. But I just know that I'm someone who, from an early age, had a really deep connection to spirit, even before I could really name it and really could understand that it was something that I was supposed to see as outside of myself. And so in my journey of connecting with spirit and going through different religious experiences and different then New Age experiences, what I noticed was there was always a disconnect that was inherent in the system that I was engaging with in spirit with. And I never completely felt authentic. And it always felt like there were a lot of rules or a lot of things that I should embody and should be practicing or doing in order to have its connection with spirit, where when I thought back at to my earlier memories as a child walking the fields and, for instance, you know, talking out to God and then feeling like, you know, their answers were flowing back to me and feeling really at home in nature and feeling really held by the spirit realm, and at any given point in my life, there wasn't ever really dogma associated with that connection. And so, yeah, as I became older and really felt like I wanted to dedicate my life more seriously to this walk with spirit, that was something that I really wanted to kind of dissect a little bit and approach a little bit and see how I can make this approachable for others and to others, because so many folks that I talk to also have that same kind of disconnect where they feel like they're really connected to spirit and they don't know quite how to trace it and quite how to practice it. And because of that, they feel disconnected from a lot of things that give us life and that really ground us and support us to move through the world as human beings, you know?
That's certainly something that I've seen in a lot of the sort of spiritual culture, especially in America, is that, you know, okay, a spiritual person looks like this, a spiritual person does this, and that there is a certain type of striving, of renouncing aspects of yourself or trying to be something that you're not in order to achieve. And the message that I hear from you so often is that, no, this is inherently you being yourself, is that connection.
Yeah. It's really, you know, for lack of a better word, and, you know, politics, I guess, plays into this, it's really decolonizing spirituality and decolonizing just our human experience. Because our ancestors were spiritual by nature. It was just inherent in who we are, because we're beings of this earth. So, of course, we looked around us and saw the things that were animated, and it wasn't just us and just the animals. There were so many, and we have so many senses to tap into that really hold us and help us to deal with the harder aspects of life that we all go through. But in my perspective, colonization takes and took so many shapes and forms, and it also one of the things that really it did was disconnect us from the connection to spirit in all things and even in ourselves. So yeah, for me, it's very much about reclaiming who we are at the root and who we've always been.
That's so beautiful. Well, Michelle, you do a lot of work with what people call the Akashic Records, and I would love to chat a bit about that. And for those who maybe haven't heard of the Akashic Records or what that is, what does that realm and your work with it mean to you?
Well, so the way that I like to explain it to people who I work with is the Akashic Records are a vibrational imprint of a soul's journey, past, present, and future possibilities. And the possibilities, I say possibilities because we have free will, and there are also always so many options open for us. So it really depends on what path that we take. But really, it's a vibrational imprint of our journeys. And then when we go into that type of work, we access it through a prayer and through invocation, and then a sort of channeling that happens. And the way I like to look at the Akashic Records is really the vibration that encompasses the Akashic Records is highest good, its highest truth, its highest justice and harmony, and all of those really what are the highest outcomes in every situation. And so from there comes this very loving, very accepting guidance for our path. And it's really steeped in love, because the idea is, and I've really experienced this over probably hundreds of readings, is that, you know, the source of who we are at a soul level is love. And so when we go to the highest frequency that we can embody, again, it is love. And so when we then enter and work within the Akashic Records, love is kind of that guiding star that the guidance will flow from. And so it can be really healing and really beautiful for people to experience that and see themselves in the full spectrum of their humanity, but also be in full acceptance of what that looks like now and what it could ultimately still look like in so many other ways, depending on what choices that we make. So when I do readings for the collective as a whole, usually, you know, what I do is I open up the Akashic Records and I ask the guides. So there is a council that you work with when you're trained into the Akashic Records. It's the council or the keepers of the records. And so those are beings who are charged with kind of safekeeping that vibrational realm, and also is the go-between between the human consciousness and the Akashic consciousness. And so when I work with the guides, of the Akashic Realm, I ask for messages for the collective. I will open up the records for the collective and just ask what is most helpful for us to hear now, you know, and what do we need to know right now in this situation that will be beneficial for us. And then I just kind of listen in and pass on that message.
Beautiful. And in a time when, you know, people are really feeling weighed down by what they're hearing in the news and looking around at the environment and things like that, are there particular messages that are coming through at this moment that you feel kind of aid in giving a perspective for humanity?
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that comes up over and over again is the reminder that we have choices, that we do have, in fact, free will, and that we have infinite possibilities in front of us, and we can choose in any moment to make a different decision. Of course, we have to work with what we're living in right now. There's no question about that. It's not about avoidance, but it's about being able to stand in the reality of what we've created and then decide from a place of empowerment, or at least from a place of presence, what would the next choice be if we had infinite possibilities. And the Akashic Records continuously remind us that we do have infinite possibility.
I love that, because so much in our dominant culture would communicate to us that we don't, that things are very limited, very scarce, very like almost like we're being squeezed.
Well, I think you always have to wonder and ask yourself, who is the narrative benefiting that I'm right now embodying? And if you take it like into a really wide lens, if you look at life or death, if you're looking at the energy of thriving and creating or decay and, you know, extraction, then you have to kind of align. You have to think about what would I'd like to align myself with. It's pretty logical, really, if you take it a step back, if you take a step back from the reactionary state that we're in right now, largely, you know. And I mean, there's probably no need to go into all of the conspiracy theories around it, but, you know, who is this narrative benefiting? Is it benefiting you? And if it's not benefiting you, then what would feel better? What would be a better fit for your life, for your family's life, and for the life that you see around you, right? Because we want to live in a world that is actually tangible to us, not so much in the ideas, but actually the world that we can affect and that we inhabit. So I think if we can just look around and see if the narrative that is being broadcasted at us from really everywhere that has a channel, if that is a narrative that is supporting my thriving and my future and my life, or maybe the life of my children and my offspring and the world around me, then sure, let's go with that. If it's not, then I, as an independent spirit, as a human being, have to tap back into my creative potential and think about something else, just like we would with any other situation. But it's just a very tight squeeze right now for us collectively. And I think really, this is why the Akashic Records, I think, are making such a comeback. I notice how they go through dips where people don't talk about them as much, and then all of a sudden they come back and everyone's thinking about Akashic Records. And I think it's here because we need to broaden our perspective, or we're invited to broaden our perspective. We have an opportunity to make an evolutionary shift. In fact, I think there is an evolutionary shift happening, but we have an opportunity to co-create it. And so the Akashic Records is kind of one of those tools that helps me give myself some space and remind myself of what's actually true versus what is being told to me.
It does really feel like a powerful time, and I know, at least for myself, undergoing a lot of healing and also awakening to the fact that we do have choice and we are quite a bit more powerful than we really realize. And only recently I was outside under the starry sky and just kind of connecting with the earth and the stars, and it dawned on me for the first time that all of the answers are truly available to humanity, that we literally don't need to look to a guru or a teacher or a priest or look in a book. And this does feel like the first dawning of an age in which we remember that truth. And I'm sure, you know, of course the wisdom keepers and all the holy people have known this, but it hasn't felt as accessible to the common person. And I'm like, wait a minute, if I am curious about something about humanity, like I can actually access that information and it's there. So that blew my mind.
Yeah, it is mind blowing, but only from a particular perspective, I guess, you know, and then once you change your vantage point, it makes so much sense. And I would even say that the gurus and the wisdom keepers have been trying to remind us, at least the ones, you know, that we're not abusing their power. They've been trying to remind us that, hey, I'm just a representation of you. I'm just holding space for you to arrive at the same place. But definitely it's a time, I feel the same way. It's a time of just awakening, you know, I mean, and that's why they call it a time of awakening. It's like, yeah, we're literally awakening.
And it's not always a pretty process. Like there's some things that I've become aware of that are just incredibly painful. Like even just a really kind of silly example, but like I wanted to get my nails done, which is not even something that I usually do. And I was kept awake all night realizing that many of the women who work in nail salons are likely trafficked, or at least basically that I was supporting a type of slavery by going to a certain type of nail salon. And I found that, of course, I couldn't do it, which is like such a basic, like vain example. But when you start to think about the impact your life has on in so many ways and the way our society's been built, it is actually a bit horrifying when you start to realize those daily choices of realizing like, wait, I don't want to support that. Why would I support that?
Mm-hmm. Now you can go to a nail salon where people are employed and paid a decent wage, you know, and work under good conditions, basically.
Right.
You know, dignified conditions where it's a regular job and it's not, and it doesn't rely on slave labor or a form of slave labor.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I hear you. It's really hard. Once I started really, really tapping into everything that we participate in and how bad it really is, I mean, I remember this was probably a good year of spiritual process of being constantly brought back by the spirits to these realizations and also being kind of trained to be awake, because we're really not trained to be awake. We're really trained to be asleep and really seeking comfort and seeking, we're constantly soothing our senses. We're, as a species, we're not very developed in our consciousness. We're really at a young age. But then also having some compassion for that state that we're in and realizing it's not necessarily, it doesn't come from internalized evil, but it comes from, I don't know, bad parenting or, you know, we're like parenting on a planetary scale, but just, we're just getting there. So everything is hard when you're doing it first. You know, for a child, it's really hard to walk and it's really hard to stay focused for a certain amount of time or to dedicate yourself to a goal. And it's hard for adults too, oftentimes. But there's a lot of things as a human species that we're just now starting to learn to hold ourselves accountable to. And so I have a lot of compassion for where we are and for myself also, understanding that a lot of it's not necessarily sinister. It's just we haven't paid attention. And now that we're getting online, it's really hard to prepare our nervous system to really hold all of the realities that are there and wrap our mind around all the work that we need to stay present to. But we can do it because we've done it in our individual lives, in our individuation and growing up, and we'll be able to do it as a species. I believe that. And that's also a message that I get from the Akasha a lot is, you know, you guys are still really young and you're working it out and it's not really cute, but you're doing it, you know, and keep doing it.
Yeah. It's like our like teenage experiment of like dominating and hurting each other and ignoring our amazing senses and all this stuff. It's like, okay, that was something you tried. And now you know why we're going in a different direction.
Well, and you have a right to that experience. You have a right to your suffering. That's also something that's been really powerful to me, is that I don't have to save anyone, and I don't even have to save myself. If I want to suffer, I have the right to actually suffer. And I can suffer as long as I need to until internally my soul is ready to make that shift. Maybe I need it, you know, maybe I won't get there otherwise.
I love that we each have a right to suffer. That's a really powerful statement, because it also, it brings our free will and our empowerment into it, even though it's not something that we would admit. Like, I know that for me, I have in the past been addicted to certain types of suffering and pain. And when it, through, you know, the grace of ritual or ceremony or just life, has been taken away from me, I almost felt lost and empty. Like, wait, who am I without this suffering? I don't even understand. And it's just like a whole process.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But you had to give it away willingly. They can, you know, the spirits can offer to take it from you, but you have to let go. And then you have to learn to walk without it. So that has to, there has to be that inner development that has to take place for you to be able to do it of your own free will, because otherwise it's just another imposing of an idea and you won't absorb it, and it won't be really real and it won't be true and it won't stay.
That's such a good distinction. Yeah, that we need to allow ourselves to let go if that's what we choose and if we're ready to do so.
Yeah, it's kind of a push and pull. I mean, for me too, I've definitely been addicted to many sufferings for a long time. And then I would say that also a lot of it is ancestral suffering, that in the ancestral lines and lineages that has been perpetuated for so long that there's been almost like an identity formed around particular sufferings that also need to be released. And we're in a time where also so much of that is happening with the generations that are on Earth right now. There's so much that we're facing, not just from our individual, from this individual moment, but from all of the collective moments that have led to this. So yeah, it's just a lot.
I'm so glad you brought up the ancestors, because in addition to this awakening, or maybe it's part of this awakening, is that it's a feeling to me of like all the lifetimes are available for healing right now. And maybe they always were, but it just feels very potent. And I would love to hear more about your work with the ancestral realms.
I think through my work with earth honoring traditions and, you know, leading more into indigenous cosmologies, I started to really feel the pull to connect to my own ancestry, because really what it sprung from was this desire to find belonging. I was really aware. I'm biracial. I'm, you know, a medium. I walk between the worlds. I've kind of always have been between several different worlds and have always been able to relate to everyone, but it was really hard for me to center in my own self and my own identity. And once I started to embark on that, then this desire to connect to my ancestry really woke up in me. And I also think that my ancestors started calling me. I could tell that there were different ceremonies, and even just spending time by bodies of water where they were giving me messages and kind of leading me down a little breadcrumb trail. Yeah, so it's been a very organic connection and relationship that we have developed. Sometimes one side is louder than the other, and then we have to kind of rebalance it. But okay, so I'm trying to figure out how I can even conceptualize what the work with the ancestors is. What I want to say about it is I think it's an important time for all of us to connect to our ancestors, because we are collectively experiencing a feeling of disconnection, separation, and loss of belonging. Really, like one day it dawned on me that we're all actually just fighting for belonging. all of these nationalist movements are really also just a cry of the soul for belonging and for identification. And then, you know, our ancestors up until very recently had so many rites and rituals to include the ancestral realm in our daily lives so that our people always knew who they were and who they came from, because there were rituals and there were stories, and it was just an aspect of daily life that we would acknowledge who we come from. And we would see the ancestral realm as a protective realm, generally, in most traditions that I'm aware of. And only in the last couple of hundred years has that really fallen away. And it's not coincidental that during that time we have been experiencing this deep disconnect even more so than we have before. We've been disconnected from spirit, we've been disconnected from the connection to the land and all those spirits, and then we've been finally disconnected from our ancestors and left as individuals, basically walking minds. And because life can't really sustain that way and we're not meant to be that way, now there's this desire that's waking up in us to reconnect. And I think at this point, where there's so much conversation around racial identity, cultural identity, cultural appropriation, nationalism versus globalism, and so on, if we really want to make an impact on healing all of these divides, in my opinion, one of the most potent things we can do is start connecting with our own ancestors, figuring out who we are, where we came from, learning some of those stories, some of the rituals that our folks had, because all of them did have that, and also tending and honoring our dead, honoring those who have come before us, because you know, I'm a spiritualist, so in our spiritualist belief system and in my experience, there's a lot of untended dead. There's a lot of ungrieved dead that, because there were no proper rituals and because there was no proper grieving, they're kind of lost. They're not in this realm and not in the other. And they don't know, because they haven't been helped to find their way to the ancestral realm. And so they lean on us. And so they express their unfulfilled needs through us a great deal. So, yeah, it's kind of hard to talk a straight line around this. But that's the gist of my ancestor work, is really working with people. People oftentimes come to me for mentorship and coaching, and what we do is we'll open up a ritual container. I'll oftentimes actually use the Akashic Records, because they're so high vibrational, to hold that space, and then we'll kind of just talk and see what comes up for them. And usually there's some issues that they're dealing with that are, you know, top of mind for them, that are usually emotional. And then we'll feel into that energy and see what is the ancestral pattern that wants to speak through that. And more times than not, there's an ancestor that's waiting to be acknowledged, that's literally leaning on them and that's saying, "This always happened to me," and so and so. And, you know, and then we acknowledge them and we ask them what we can do for them, and we give them prayers and we elevate them. There's different ritual ways to elevate those ancestors and acknowledge them so that they can kind of take their rightful place as an ancestor, as a healed ancestor that can now support the person who's in a body on their path, rather than trying to still get their needs met from them.
Yeah, I'm so glad we're talking about this. And in particular, once those ancestors are able to be uplifted, like you said, then so much of the wisdom from their life can be passed down to us and become gifts to us, instead of a pattern of us kind of hurting ourselves through not acknowledging them.
It's a lot of unprocessed trauma, really. It's very much the same as when we're stuck in a trauma pattern in our life, and we consistently replay that trauma, but it blocks us from having access from all the wisdom that probably was generated through the survival of the trauma and everything else around it. You know, trauma has a way of kind of blocking out and overtaking and overshadowing everything else. And it's the same thing in the spiritual realm. If we can release the trauma that they experienced, then they can come into their wholeness, and then we can draw on their wisdom, and they can draw on their wisdom, and they can become actually useful.
Like true allies for our life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I love how you speak about this emptiness, and you made such a good point about how, okay, we've been disconnected from spirit. We've been disconnected from the land. We've been disconnected from the spirit in our own selves. I mean, no wonder we're wandering around feeling empty, feeling like hungry for something. And we are trying to fill it, of course, with all of these things that can never satiate that hunger. And I love your point that you make too. I think it's somewhere on your website about that hunger is what drives cultural appropriation and pillaging the earth. And it makes so much sense, because if we don't know who we are and we don't feel fulfilled and rooted in our own being, then of course we're going to be looking externally and being like, oh, look at that pretty, those pretty feathers. I want that. Oh, I want that piece of land too. And I want this pretty song from that culture, and there's just no satiating it, really.
Right. There's no satiating it because there's no foundation. So it's really literally a bottomless pit. You could just keep pouring into it, and it would never really fulfill you. It'll fulfill you for 5 minutes, and then you'll need something else, because that's that sensation of your needs being met has already dissipated. And yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because now it strikes me that, right, so we've been disconnected from all of those levels of connection that we've had, and then we've learned and been trained to seek our connection through material things and through achievement in the outside world. And now capitalism has hit a point where it's no longer sustainable, and it's caving in on itself. And so even that is now falling away for us. So it's a perfect powder keg, but also what do? We go back to what we actually have available to us, which was always there.
Absolutely. I mean, I had this experience just in the last month of the air not being breathable due to the fires here in the West. And there's literally nothing that I could buy to make it so that I could breathe the air. Like, there's nowhere to turn if you cannot breathe the air. Like, the trees are burning. It brings into stark focus what really matters.
Wow, it's really powerful. It's kind of sad that we're at that point. And at the same time, yeah, I do have a lot of compassion again, because I know how hard-headed I am. And then if I think about it on a macro level, maybe this is what it's taking for us to really wake up, you know?
Yeah, I do hope that it can be seen in that way. Like, okay, wow, that was a really harsh wake-up call. Let's change course.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, we all have to stay awake and stay engaged. We just can't rely on others to lead us anymore. We need to be able to know what's going on and be engaged in that process.
Yeah, that kind of makes me think too of the five senses, or even the more than five senses in that particular instance with the smoke, is that I only had to use my senses to notice that something is terribly wrong. And I saw how there were people who were waiting for an authority to tell them if the air was safe to breathe or not, and if they needed to evacuate or not, or leave, or, you know, go indoors and stop working. And it was, in a way, quite empowering for me, because I realized I absolutely do not need an authority to tell me that I can't breathe this air. I know I can't breathe this air. I can smell the chemicals. I'm coughing, my eyes are burning, my throat hurts. Like, I don't need to ask anybody. Like, if I need to go, I'm going to go. Like, there's no, capitalism can't hold me to breathe this. Like, and obviously that's also a very privileged place to be, because, you know, I'm certainly, you know, not like, oh my God, I have to go into the factory today or else I won't eat, you know, which is something that a lot of people are dealing with.
Yeah. You guys, I mean, I know that the rest of the world, at least the rest of the country, we were watching you and just in awe of how you're living through that intensity.
I love what you say about that you feel spirituality can and must be experienced in the midst of our everyday lives.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if I believe, which I do, that the world around me is alive and is spirited just like I am, then I have an opportunity at every turn to engage with spirit in another way. I don't have to sequester spirit to, you know, an hour on Sundays or a particular ceremony. I can really take it into my own daily life. And actually, I really, really leaned into this when my kids, who are now, you know, preteens and one little teen, when they were little, about 2 and 3, and we did Waldorf education. And that philosophy is just so steeped in spirit and ritual every day for the children, where literally we were corresponding the grain of the day with the planetary influence that was strongest for the day of the week. And there were always candles lit for every meal. And there was thanksgiving to all of the elements. And to me, it was really like such a safe and beautiful way to introduce spirit into the everyday life that I realized this is what I experienced when I was younger. And then I kind of conceptualized myself out of it. And now that I'm coming back into it, it's so easy to incorporate spirit in everyday life. So, you know, the way that looks practically is that I offer a plate of food from our meals to our ancestors. We have a little ancestor shrine, and then we put the pictures and their names and a candle and a glass of water, and we give them food from our food, and we ask them to feed us in return, the same way that we feed them, that they always make sure that we have enough food to eat. It looks like engaging with the spirit of the hearth in my kitchen, which is like a pretty old Slavic tradition that I became aware of years ago, but I always kind of knew it was there. And so once I started practicing it, I would give little offerings to the spirit in the kitchen to bless the home and to make sure that the home is a beautiful sanctuary for us. It looks like praying with and for the elements, going to a river and seeing it as a living being and asking for its blessings and also blessing it in return, and realizing that life is everywhere, and everywhere that life is, there's spirit. So yeah, that's kind of the gist of that. You can really engage with spirit in anything that has life in it has a spirit. And so I'm somebody who likes to have good relationships, so I would like to then tend those relationships with spirit as well. And it's really impacted my life for the better, I would say. You know, I think that it's something that you can tangibly feel, and it's also a way that you can deal with the world, deal with life, everyday issues that we face, and you don't feel so alone, and you do have support and options and allies at every turn.
That's so beautiful. It's like the antidote to our loneliness, our feeling of being lost and alone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially in the time of a pandemic where so many people are feeling more lonely than ever. Maybe this is an opportunity to start to establish relationships with the more than human world and see where that takes us.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, I know, like, we've been privileged to experience these ideas in ceremony. And so when you go through ceremonies, it becomes pretty apparent to you that spirit is all around us and we can address spirit in its many forms. And then we can take it a step further. And just like we say, you don't have to just sequester spirit to a week, an hour on Sundays. You don't have to just do it in ceremony when someone else is facilitating that for you. You can now take that into your own hands and see where does it feel real and right to you. Maybe it feels like planting some flowers on your back porch, you know, and putting maybe a crystal there for the fairies. Maybe it means blessing your water in the shower and thanking it for everything it's doing for you and asking it to cleanse you. Those are simple things that you can start. Or maybe it means going into some fairy tales and reading some of the stories that our ancestors left us about how to engage with the spirits that are all around us everywhere.
Those are great examples. And I love that in those, there's no having to ask permission to engage with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's inherent to us. We're spirited. We are, I mean, if we believe, of course, if we don't believe that, we don't have to argue. But if we believe that we're spirit embodied, then we have to look around and see the same thing for other living things. And then it's just logical to take the next step and introduce yourself and then just see what comes from there.
Well, I'm wondering for listeners who might be really curious about working with their ancestors but have never consciously done so, is there any advice or guidance you would give for what that first step might look like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It can be very easy. Someone, and I forget, I heard this years ago and I did it. It was a little ritual by someone who started working with their ancestors. And I've passed it on to the folks that I work with a lot, which is you can take a glass of water and you'll light a candle. And with intention, you'll light your candle and then you will speak over the water a prayer, a blessing, and you'll direct it to your ancestors. So you will ask your ancestors to come back. You can ask them to make themselves known to you, and you can let them know that you're sad or sorry, that you've forgotten about them, and you really want to know about them, and you want to have a stronger connection with them. And just speak into your glass of water whatever your intention is, whatever your message is for your ancestors, because the idea is that water holds vibration, and water is also a conduit for spirit. So you'll speak your intention into this water, and then you will drink half of the glass, and then you can take it outside and preferably by a tree, pour the other half to a tree. And then you just kind of pay attention to your dreams and make yourself open to however they may come to you. Another way, if you want to have something a little bit more tangible that you can work with, is just put up a simple ancestor altar. The simplest way is just a white cloth, a white candle, and a glass of water. And then if you have any pictures of your ancestors, of your, you know, the closer ones, you can put those up. Just make sure that there's no living people in the pictures with them. And then you can just make that a focal point where you go and you just meditate, where you maybe journal and focus on them specifically. Sometimes it really helps if there's someone who, maybe it was a grandmother or somebody who you had a relationship in life and has passed away, that you can kind of focus on initially for them to open up that relationship. Then you just leave little offerings. What we do in our home is we take a little plate and we give a little of everything that we eat and we put on the plate and offer it to the spirits. And we leave it out usually anywhere from an hour to 24 hours. Sometimes they like it more, but if we're going to be really cautious, everyone doesn't feel so comfortable leaving food out. So I always say do an hour or to 24 hours. And then kind of feel how you feel. Sometimes there's something where I'll maybe give my grandmother something that she loved and she'll say, like, leave it. I'm not ready for it to go yet. I haven't finished. And you kind of just have to have an open mind, obviously. And you have to be open to just kind of exploring the relationship and how it wants to present itself to you. Usually what the observation is for me is that, and for a lot of people, is that the food doesn't spoil very quickly, especially if it's something that they enjoy. It will stay there kind of like in a museum for a while if you leave it. Also, I like to give my ancestors some of their vices, things that they enjoyed in life, maybe a cigar or a pack of cigarettes or brandy, rum, stuff like that, coffee with sugar, something indulgent, a sweet, a treat. Spirits really like scents. So oftentimes when I'm consulting with someone, there's a spirit, an ancestor spirit that is saying, you know, I would love to have this perfume again that I used to love to wear. And then you'll put it on the altar. And when you want to connect with them, you just kind of spray it in the air. And it helps you to feel close to them. And it helps them to also feel close. And another really good one is flowers. I don't know what it is about flowers. My theory is that they amplify like little antennas, their essence, because they tend to really love them. And so I usually give fresh flowers in a vase and I leave it there for as long as they'll stay. And they'll oftentimes stay fresh for 2 weeks, sometimes 3 weeks. Well, they'll just look great. And you're like, huh, that's interesting. So, yeah, it's a mix of ritual and just being open to seeing how that all shows up, and just spending time there, you know. A lot of folks, when they start working with their ancestors, experience a lot of sadness, sometimes anger. That's kind of the energy that will meet them first. Most of the time, really, it's deep sadness. Probably because they weren't grieved, or they weren't grieved properly, or they were forgotten, and it's just been kind of stuck there. So that can be something that can feel a little awkward at first, but it's not going to stay that way. So I would just recommend to consistently go there, to this altar, to this shrine, whatever you want to make it, and just spend time there. Ask them a question, journal, see what comes up for you. See if there's a song that keeps coming up in your mind. Sometimes there's just particular music that they connect with, and that they also will communicate to you with. There's going to be so many different ways to communicate. It's just really personal to the relationship that you have with them. Yeah, that would be a nice way to start. And then I would say, just because I get this a lot, because it's become very trendy, I would say, don't necessarily go to your ancestors because you want something. That can come later, you know, once that is that relationship is established and they've been properly grieved and they've been elevated and they feel in a place where they even have anything to offer to you. Just go there and give them love and respect for your life and you being here, and just see what that feels like and see what comes out of that. And it'll also help you from feeling like nothing's happening and I'm not doing it right.
That's a great point. And this truly is a very powerful process, and things really do open up in ways that you might never imagine, whether dreams from your ancient ancestors. I know I've had like Norwegian women come and talk to me about runes and, you know, just simple things like my mom, like discovering a book about our ancestors' entire journey across America in the 1800s, you know, like just almost miraculous kind of things that one would never expect. So I definitely encourage those who are feeling called to it to start to explore.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's such a great point. I want that. Thanks for mentioning that. They want to be known. And so they will start opening up that path for you to learn more about them. It's really just, you just have to be kind of willing and put a foot out and start the process. And I do encourage folks to just kind of do a little research, do a little digging, ask the elders in your family also, especially before they pass on. One of my elders always says, talk to the oldest people in your family before they're gone, because that knowledge will be lost with them. So just ask them about stories and ask them about relatives. And oftentimes they'll be so surprised because no one ever wants to talk about that stuff. But especially as they get older, they really love to share those stories, you know, and who wouldn't? Who would want to be forgotten? No one wants to be forgotten.
Well, that's the really interesting thing that I wanted to mention, is that when I started to work with the ancestors for the very first time in my own life, I started to think about, what kind of ancestor do I want to be? What do I want to leave? What legacy do I want to actually build? And if my, you know, great, great, great grandchildren know just my name and maybe a sentence about me, what do I want that sentence to be? Do I want it to be something beautiful and life affirming? Or do I want it to just be like, oh, she lived in Portland, like she was a lady, like, let's do, like, honestly, I feel like in this moment, it's like, we have the opportunity to be epic. Like, let's do something epic so that our descendants can be like, wow, my great, great, great grandmother was a complete and utter badass and so awesome. And I want to be like her. Like, why not aim for that? Like, let's aim for the stars here, people.
Absolutely. No, I mean, absolutely. Especially Yeah, I've had those same things happen, especially I've lost, you know, as we get older, we lose people in our life, you know, that you don't kind of suspect. And it puts you, like I lost my father a few years ago, and it really shifted my perspective on mortality and one day I won't be here. And what will my children remember of me? And what will the stories be that they tell their children, if they have any, because I'm now having to think of stories that I need to, that I can tell them, you know, about my father, my grandmother, people who are really impactful in my life. They're not always going to be here. So yeah, absolutely. It really puts it in perspective of legacy and what legacy do I want to leave behind? And why not aim for something big? These are big times. It's not like we're sitting in this whenever. I mean, I don't know when there wasn't a time when legacy couldn't be made. But.
Yeah. Well, even as people who are born into, like, as women, we are in this very unprecedented time, you know, considering the last maybe 1,000 years or so, that we have incredible choice, free will, sovereignty, mostly over our choices and the things that we can do with our life. So it's like, whoa, what an opportunity. And gosh, I want my descendants to be proud, but also I want my ancestors to be proud, and I want to be proud of them. So there's a lot of healing that certainly needs to happen, because, you know, many of our ancestors have gone through terrible times and have also done terrible things. I mean, you know, depending on what culture, you know, you're coming from. I mean, I'm certainly from a European culture, and man, there were wars. There was a lot. So there's just a lot of healing to be done, but I think it's so fruitful.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Absolutely. And then also I want to say, maybe lastly, just that everything doesn't have to be big and huge. I think, you know, it's not like we all have to, I don't know what we all have to march, you know, make our mark on history, but maybe we were just someone who took care of everyone, or someone that people felt comfortable with, and someone who developed their own skills, whatever those might be. You know, maybe I was a great baker. Maybe they'll say, oh my gosh, you made the most amazing pies, and this is a recipe from my great-great-grandmother, Michelle. You know, like, that would be fine. I would be fine with that. But really thinking about what's my impact, and is it worthy? Do I feel worthy with it?
That's a great point. And even just alone not passing down trauma is such a victory. Like, to me, that's so epic. Like, okay, I've been given this heavy weight of trauma, and I'm going to work so that I'm not passing it down and down and down and down. If I can be the one to break the cycle, to shift and alchemize that cycle, that is epic to me. And nobody could ever know, but they could just, your descendants just might feel their hearts a little more radiant and joyful, and they won't even know what they didn't have to go through.
Yeah.
Well, Michelle, we're wrapping up our time, and I wanted to know if there's anything else that feels very potent for you, whether in your work or for the collective, that you want to mention before we close out.
I mean, everything is potent right now, you know? So I think everything we've talked about feels really important. And then, not that, yeah, I guess I just kind of want to leave that. We leave this with folks to contemplate, is also like, how are we building community? You know, how are we showing up in community? Because it's something that I'm really pondering, and all of my work kind of circles around that, you know, internally and externally, is as we're rediscovering ourselves and as we're rediscovering our connection to spirit and to the world around us, that other layer is stewardship, you know, of relationships and of responsibility. And yeah, it's something that I think we really need to tackle, so that we don't feel so alone, and so that we don't feel so isolated and without choices, because we really do have everything. That's something that spirit is constantly reiterating, is that we really do have all the choices, we have all the tools, and we have each other. And if we kind of can learn to make that work with each other, and if we kind of can stay present long enough to build bridges and to build foundations that we can grow on, then, you know, I think we have something good and we can hopefully leave a great legacy for our descendants.
Speaking of community, it makes me think of some of the offerings that you are sharing with the world. Tell us about what you're offering.
Yeah, so right now I have two different offers that I'm hosting or holding. One is a community offering. It's called Coming Home. It's a monthly mentorship community. And what we do is basically speak about spirituality in practice, embodied in everyday life. So there's every month a different module of spiritual practice that we kind of tackle. And I usually offer a Q&A call, a workshop, and then there's a virtual community where we kind of share resources and share our thoughts. And there's a couple of just unscheduled connection calls where we just kind of check in and have an opportunity to just kind of share our hearts and see where we're at in life. Yeah, that's one. So in this month, in October, we'll be actually speaking about ancestors. It's going to be all about ancestor veneration, about ritual, community rituals, and different ways to relate to the ancestors and honor them, especially in this time of year where they kind of really are looking for us to give them some time and energy and treats instead of tricks. So that's one. It's called Coming Home. And then I'm also now hosting monthly Akashic Records group meditations. Those will be online as well. They're just an hour. It's really just an opportunity to tap into the Akashic Records and just relax and get a nice download and maybe let the nervous system get a little break and just get some insights from a larger, broader perspective. Yeah, those are my two offerings that I'm hosting right now. I'm not really doing one-on-one work currently, but it's all about the group stuff.
Beautiful. And for those who'd like to check one of those or both of them out, where can we find you online?
Mm-hmm. You can find me on my website, evolvetolove.com. And then also I'm pretty active on Instagram, which is also at evolvetolove. And also you can find me on Facebook, evolvetolove.
And that's Evolve and then the number 2, Love.
Yeah, thank you for pointing that out. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much, Michelle, for sharing about your work and your perspective. It's been really nourishing to talk with you. And yeah, I can't wait to continue to follow what you're up to in this world.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to speak with you. So lovely to be part of your work that also is enriching the world. So thank you for your presence and what you're offering. I'm really honored to be here.
Thank you for listening to the show. You can hear other episodes on moontent.co or subscribe to the Moonwise podcast on iTunes or Spotify. If you enjoyed the episode, please rate us on iTunes and leave a review. I read each and every review and appreciate your feedback and support so much. You can also leave a comment on the Moonwise Sisterhood group in Facebook. Our theme music is by Sophie Cooper from her album Rewilding. You can find her online at voicealchemy.com. See you next time.